The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Command Zone. I'm Jimmy Wong.
How's it? I'm Josh Lee Kwai.
And today we're going to talk about Titania.
Protector of Argoth.
Where is Argoth? We have no idea.
Why does it need protecting? I'm not sure.
I know, especially with her kind of protection, it's very interesting.
Why do they make us say these geeky names? Like Brimaz, King of Oreskos. It's like, oh man. It's like when I'm about the cards, do they have to make me sound as dorky as possible? Like,
pretty much.
Yeah.
I like Soren Solemn Visitor.
I like Soren Super Stoked
Super
better.
Super Stoked. Yeah, we'll have to wait for the next unset for that to happen.
Oh, we should say, everyone, happy Thanksgiving.
Gobble, gobble, gobble. And if you're not from the U.S., happy November.
Happy...
End of November.
Yeah, happy end of November.
It was a good month.
Mm-hmm. But if you're from the U.S., happy turkey eating.
Definitely. Us here in Thanksgiving us here in Los Angeles, not Thanksgiving, are enjoying a balmy Thanksgiving. I think it's going to be like 80 degrees.
You know the greatest thing about winter?
It doesn't exist here.
It's watching it from California.
That's true. I think Buffalo is supposed to get 7 feet. Well, actually, if this is on Tuesday, Buffalo did get 7 feet of snow 2 days ago.
Yeah, they canceled the football games and everything. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, and here it's sunny, and we're complaining when it's 60 degrees out because we have to go inside and get a sweater. Wah, wah.
No, actually, I'm not complaining. Like, I'm excited. I'm like, I get to wear my jacket for like one of the three times all year I'll get to wear it.
I know.
Did I spend $200 on a jacket I wear twice a year?
I literally have a closet of like four hoodies that I just never wear. And I never buy new ones because I wear each one once a year. So it works out pretty well in my favor there.
Okay, so Titania.
Yeah, she was a new legendary creature. We talked about her a little bit with the green deck, mostly that she didn't fit in the green Commander 2014 deck because she has a weird Enter the Battlefield effect, and her main effect doesn't really apply to the cards in the deck.
Yeah, the mono green deck was mostly an elf deck. It was pretty linear, but it was clear that Titania was one of the cards they put in there that could lead you down a different path to sort of brew your own deck, but it didn't really work with the cards that they had. So, of course, that got our minds racing, and we were very excited. And so this is sort of our first pass, maybe a rough draft, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, I've actually got the cards in front of us. Like, I put a deck together. But
get the wheels turning, at least.
Yeah, I think, you know, we'd like you listeners out there to sort of listen to what we have to say, and then we'd like to hear from you guys because, you know, like I said, this is first pass. There's probably a whole bunch of cards we haven't thought of because this is just like...
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So we'd love to get some help building this deck and making it as good as possible. So
yeah, and that's the fun part about deck building too, is sort of crowdsourcing opinions.
Yeah.
Because I love going to Tapped Out and finding just a bunch of different deck lists or forum threads and seeing like, oh, wow, this card is busted.
Yeah, and it's like, I never even heard of that card.
Yeah, it costs 20 cents.
Yeah. I mean, how often are you talking to your friends and they see your deck and they're like, you know what you need in there?
Yeah.
And they say some card and you're like, what does that do? And you look it up and you're like, I do need that in there. Like,
yep.
Yeah, it's so we need your help.
It's pretty often, yeah. So before we get going on this special Thanksgiving Turkey Day edition deck tech of Titania, there are no turkey-themed cards, however, be sure you guys follow us on Twitter at CommandCast because we are going to be doing some more giveaways. We're back at it. We got some really good stuff to give away. So make sure you guys give us a follow.
Yeah, give us a follow. Give me a follow at Josh Lee Kwai.
Yeah.
You can give Jimmy a follow too, but he has a gajillion followers. So
yeah, I'm not,
I need them more than he does.
Yeah. You know what? If you follow me, I'll tell you to unfollow me and go follow Josh until the numbers equalize.
Well, that's going to take a while. But the great thing about Twitter is that you can follow more than one person.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, you could follow as many as you want.
And it makes your feed all the more lively for it.
We're going to be giving away all kinds of stuff. You're going to have to follow us on Twitter to have a chance to win that stuff. We've got the dual deck
Speed versus Cunning.
We got Fat Packs.
Yeah, and we have
booster packs
here. Boosters.
We've got some play mats.
Let's just okay. Some people have sent us the pictures of the stuff we've sent them.
Oh
Someone,
my gosh, we have the touch.
Yeah. Well, they have the touch. We have.
We
the giving.
Gave them the packs.
That's true.
Yeah.
Someone cracked open a Mana Confluence value, and another person cracked open a Goblin Rabble Master.
That's a pretty good one.
Yeah, those are both great cards.
Two cards which I can never actually pull out of a pack, by the way.
Yeah, two cards that are, by the way, still missing from some of my standard decks. So
every pack that I open just has Hardened Scales in it. That's it.
Yeah, it's a one of in Annamar deck, I guess.
I already have seven of them, so.
Yeah, you should see how many like Master of Pearls I have.
Oh,
goodness.
Yeah. it's a good limited card.
Yeah, it's a great limited card. Yeah. Oh, let's not even talk about how many aggressive minings I pulled at this point.
Oh, I'm sorry.
At least it's red in my spirit color.
Oh, yeah,
so,
it is. Yeah, that's why the universe is giving them to you.
Yeah, thanks, universe, for nothing.
Okay, so on to the deck tech, or the... This is really like a brew tech.
Brew tech, this
is not a finished deck. This is a sort of brainstorming session almost. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've put the deck together. We've played it a little bit. Just goldfish it out. It looks pretty good. The ratios probably need to be worked on.
Yeah.
But
especially because this deck does some really interesting things.
I mean, it can totally go off.
You know? Yeah.
So, well, let me read Titania really quick for those that don't know. So she's a legendary creature. She costs 3 and 2 green, so 5 mana total. She's an elemental 5/3. When Titania enters the battlefield, return target land card from your graveyard to the battlefield. Whenever a land you control is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, put a 5/3 green elemental creature token onto the battlefield.
Cool. So she makes sort of like a mini version of herself because the toughness and strength are still the same there.
And it's an elemental, and she's an elemental, so that's cool.
Yeah.
So anytime one of your lands that's in play goes to the graveyard, you get a 5/3. And also, whenever she comes into play, you get to pull one of your lands from your graveyard and put it directly into play.
Right.
So two effects that work together.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately, what's this make you think of?
Lands that sacrifice themselves.
Yeah.
To do something.
Especially lands that sacrifice themselves to, I don't know, go find another land.
Oh, Khans of Tarkir?
Maybe
lands
fetch
that
lands?
Do-
maybe, maybe. It seems to work extremely well with that in particular.
Yeah, definitely.
Because now any fetch land says, sacrifice this land. Put a 5/3 into play. Go
and
find
a land.
Yes,
yeah.
And go find a land and put that into play. So it's just like you tack... Put a 5/3 into play onto all your fetch lands. That makes them even awesomer than they were.
Yeah.
And the good thing about Commander is the way the rules work, you can have cards like Wooded Foothills. Wooded Foothills says, sacrifice it, pay one life, search your library for a mountain or forest card and put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. Well, you don't have to have any mountain cards in your deck to play this card. Now, you can't play a mountain in your deck. But you can play a card that could go find a mountain or a forest. Yeah. So, in fact, you could play this card in your deck even if you didn't have mountains or forests. I mean, it would be kind of dumb. But
unless
you
had something that made it something else, you know.
Yeah. But you could under Commander rules. So this is, you know, cards like that. We're going to go through like a lot of different card types that we're thinking of. But
a lot of lands are historically like Strip Mine, I think, is one of the most famous lands, which is specifically destroying another land. So aside from just getting yourself a 5/3, if Titania's out, you also get to affect the board in a way, which is really cool.
Yeah, and the way Titania, when she comes in, she can bring that Strip Mine back out of your graveyard, put it into play, you can use it again. That's another great card. So I think the first step in building Titania is that the one big stumbling block is going to be lands per turn, just the one land per turn rule.
Right, because you don't want to sacrifice one land player and get one land back and just sort of have like, all right, so is one and one, and I got to play a land. You want to be moving faster than she can bring stuff back.
And you don't want to be on turn 7 and you've only got 7 lands. Like that's just not going to be fast enough in Commander. You're going to need to be able to circumvent that rule. So there's a number of cards throughout the history of Magic that do it. One is Exploration.
Yes.
It's 1 green for an enchantment. It just says you may play an additional land on each of your turns. So that's a good one.
Pretty simple. One of the more famous creatures of all time, Azusa, Lost But Seeking, 2 and a green, 1 and a 2. You may play 2 additional lands on each of your turns.
So,
turn 1, I mean, when you get her out, you can play 3 lands, which is insane.
I mean, that's an amazingly powerful card. I mean, there's a card from Alpha called Fast Bond that lets you play as many lands every turn as you want, and it's banned in all formats.
For a good reason.
Yes, because it's extremely powerful to just be able to put down as many lands as you can. So Azusa sort of does a fair version of that.
Mm-hmm.
There's another card called...
Air quotes, fair
version. Yeah, it's still broken. I mean, there's Azusa decks with her as the commander that are extremely powerful.
Oh, yes. especially getting around turn two.
Yeah, because you're guaranteed to get her out early and dump just a ton of lands on the table. And ramp, as we know, ramp and card draw are the two most powerful things you can do in Commander. Mm-hmm. There's another card called Burgeoning. It's also one green. It's also an enchantment. It says, whenever any opponent plays a land, you may choose a land card from your hand and put it into play. So that also circumvents the one land per turn.
Yeah, and Yavimaya Elder, which I think any green deck that's heavily green, because he's got two green in his mana cost, it's like an auto-include. And it's just a creature that when he's put into a graveyard, you can search your library for two basic lands and put them into your hand, and then you shuffle your library. And you can also just pay two and sacrifice them to draw a card. So you get the card and the two lands. Yeah.
Now, the difference with that is that doesn't actually put them into play, but
correct.
In a deck like this, you're going to have a bunch of ways
to get them into play.
You want to you want to not only get the lands into play, but you just want to get them into your hand. There's another card called Armillary Sphere. It's an artifact for two. It says two and tap it, sacrifice Armillary Sphere. Search your library for up to two basic land cards, reveal them, and put them into your hand, then shuffle your library. So it's basically like a card draw spell, but it specifically finds two basic land cards.
Yeah.
So,
and the funny thing is a lot of these cards, like Armillary Sphere, however you say it. Yeah, it isn't necessarily a good card in a lot of decks. It's still useful, but I'm sure in many decks you'll find a better slot for something else. But in this deck in particular, it does what the deck wants, and it is a really effective ramp.
Because every land is effectively a 5/3 in addition to a land. So it's very powerful. So then...
Fetch lands.
Yes. So the next category is fetch lands. We talked about Wooded Foothills.
Yeah, to keep in mind, there are other lands that aren't actually fetch lands that are in Karns of Tokir.
They're not what we call fetch lands,
right,
but they are fetch lands in that they do go fetch a land. Like, this is a really cheap one.
Yeah, Evolving Wilds, where you tap it, sacrifice it, search your library for a basic land card, and put it into the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. So that's sort of the downside of that. But, you know, if you're playing three lands every turn, it's not a huge deal.
Also, if it says... search your library, put a 5/3 into play, and put a land into play tapped. It's a lot better.
It's a lot better.
For a normal deck, that's kind of a downside. But for this one, it's like, but I get a 5/3.
Yep, pretty solid.
There's also some older ones. I think these are from Mirage. Mountain Valley is one of them. And they're sort of... they're the reverse of Evolving Wild. So Mountain Valley itself comes into play tapped.
Gotcha.
And then you sacrifice Mountain Valley. You can go find a mountain or forest and put it into play. And so when you put the Mountain or Forest into play, it's not tapped, but this card itself comes into play tapped. So it still puts you behind a turn, quote unquote, but it also says put a 5/3 into play if Titania is out.
Yeah. And Titania will probably be out. You shouldn't be sacrificing lands in this deck unless she is out.
Yeah, probably. I mean, you might have to one or two just to get her out, but in general, you're going to want to save all your sacrifice effects until she's out. The next category we wrote down was sac lands and destruction lands. So lands that sacrifice themselves, let you sac other lands, or lands that destroy other lands. So Tectonic Edge is one of them. It's very much like Strip Mine, which we talked about earlier. It's just the fair version. So it's a land. You can tap it for a colorless, and it says pay one colorless and tap it. Sacrifice Tectonic Edge. Destroy target non-basic land. Activate this ability only if an opponent controls four or more lands. So it makes it harder to just totally hose them, their mana. But the thing about Tectonic Edge and Strip Mine, we didn't read it earlier. I'll read it now. It's also a land that taps to add one colorless to your mana pool, or you can tap and sacrifice Strip Mine and destroy target land. There's no conditions
on it.
Yeah,
no conditions.
Strip Mine's extremely powerful. Now, both of these in this deck... very often you're going to tap it, sacrifice it, and destroy your own land.
Right.
To get 2 5/3s.
Right.
Yeah, so that's...
also, politically, it feels a lot nicer, because people want to be like, you wrecked my land or whatever. You're doing it to a land that either has an effect when it leaves, which it does in this case.
Right.
And I'm sure there's some lands, too, that also do something when they leave.
And this ability to do it at instant speed also can be done on the end step prior to your turn. So all of a sudden, you can have nothing on the board, or maybe just a couple of 5/3s, and you can go... sacrifice these two lands, kill two of my other lands, and sacrificing the Strip Mine or the Tectonic Edge itself, and get four five threes into play. And they have basically haste because now it's your turn because you did it at instant speed.
Yeah,
so
pretty nice.
Very powerful, yeah.
Dust Bowl does basically the same thing, except it costs 3 to tap it, sacrifice a land, destroy target non-basic land.
Except for Dust Bowl, you don't have to sacrifice Dust Bowl.
That's right. Oh my gosh. I didn't even see that.
That's the thing about Dust Bowl is Dust Bowl, you can sort of do it every turn.
Right, and you could do it to... so it's like a land sac outlet.
Yes.
That's incredibly powerful. Yeah. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. It's only target non-basic land, but it's very powerful, so it's repeatable. And what that says in your deck is sacrifice a land, pay 3, sacrifice a land.
get a 5-3.
Get 2 5-3s if you're destroying your own land, and one if you're destroying somebody else's. And we like that, you know, we've talked about this many times. We like that versatility where, like, well, if I have to, I can destroy my opponent's land. Mm-hmm. You know, if I look and they're like, they're blue, red, and white, and they only have one blue mana, I'll just destroy that blue mana just to slow them down. But, you know, a lot of times I can choose to use it on myself if I just needed a couple more guys.
Yeah, and you're always going to want to have that choice anyway. I don't see yourself not doing it to other people that often. I mean, not that often. It's like, I can see pretty much, I'd say like 50-50, you're going to be like, I need to wreck this guy's land, otherwise he's going to, like, he's in a color that can destroy my enchantments that I really need for the sec to pop off, so.
And you'll see later we have another category that will mean that you can get these back and recur them.
Oh, yeah.
So that's sort of where you can just, well, it doesn't matter, I'll destroy his now and I'll destroy mine later.
Yeah, exactly.
One more card I wanted to say, and there's a few cards like this, and I'll just use this one to represent
everything really like
in this category.
Card, by the way.
Yeah, it's called Lotus Veil. It's a land. It says, when Lotus Veil comes into play, sacrifice 2 untapped lands you control. And then you can tap Lotus Veil to add 3 mana of any color to your mana pool. So it becomes those 2 lands in addition to itself. Now, the lands have to be untapped when you sacrifice them. So in general, it's...
Well, what it's doing is it's, you know, it's creating 3 mana when it's killing 2 mana, 2 other mana sources. Yes. But the nice thing is that it does what a Gilded Lotus does.
Yeah, exactly. This says, create 2 5-3s. And you don't lose any of your mana that you would have had otherwise.
In fact,
otherwise.
You may be able to fix your mana even better now that that's out.
Yes, exactly. And there's a few lands. There's another land that does it and creates colorless mana. There's lands that sort of keep you at mana parity, but they sacrifice lands. So it's like, instead of mana parity, you actually just are up 5-3 tokens.
Yeah.
The next category?
If you're making a deck with lands, you better have some...
Landfall. Wow, it's like, did we practice that?
I know, we did. Yeah. Lotus Cobra. Great card. 1 in the green for a 2/1. Landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. So it's
very,
like a doubler.
Very powerful. Especially when you consider that this deck is going to be stacking effects, like we talked about earlier, Exploration, Burgeoning, Azusa. So
just popping them off, too.
Yeah, you're going to be dumping maybe 3-4 lands into play on some turns. Well, now you can not only tap those lands, but every time they come in, they gave mana to you. So it's a lot of ramp.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lotus Cobra not... great in EDH in general because after the first 3 or 4 turns you're just maybe giving you 1 mana every couple turns but
in this deck is built to put lands
into play like continuously, it's very powerful. Rampaging Baloths, another very powerful, and this is maybe one of the few cards where if Titania is not in play you can use this card to still win. Rampaging Baloths is 4 and 2 green, so 6 mana total for a creature beast. It's a 6/6. It has trample, but it has landfall. It says, whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may put a 4/4 green beast creature token onto the battlefield.
Oh, yeah. He's kind of like a mini version of Titania.
He's like a reverse Titania. Like, hers is when your lands die. His are when your lands are cast quote-unquote, when they come in. So,
but in conjunction, they
if
are
If you have them
terrifying.
Both out, there's a really good chance you win because you might play 2, 3, 4 lands, sack them all, and now you made 4 4/4s and 4 5/3s.
Yeah.
You know, and it's
if
just,
you have something that gives them haste, like
Concordant Crossroads.
Wow, did we practice that one too?
And there's, I like this other one you've got too.
Yeah. I'd like to also imagine that Rampaging Baloths is like Titania's pet. That's
oh, in reality?
Yeah, in reality. That's
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I like to think that because they just do
it's
such
not, that's
similar.
Not official. That's not canon.
But it's just like there's such similar esque things that like I can imagine her just sort of carrying him
Let's
around.
Let's add that to the lore. Titania rides into battle on the back of a bunch of Rampaging Baloths.
Rampaging Baloths, protectors of Argoth. All right, Seer's Sundial, a 4-drop artifact, landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may pay 2 if you do draw a card.
So really good in this deck. You're going to need card draw really badly because you're going to be playing a whole bunch of lands.
Not to mention it stacks well with like Lotus Cobra as well. Because you're getting half that mana all the way.
Yep. So every time you play a land, you're going to draw a card. You might draw another land. You probably be able to play it because you're going to have all these effects that allow you to play more than one land. You draw another card. Like you can maybe play 4, 5, 6 land in a turn sometimes.
How long do you think each of your turns is going to take with this deck?
Early on, not. And then the turn where you win will probably take a little bit because there's some math involved. We'll talk about that a little later. But
As it should.
So the next category then, so you get a bunch of lands into play. Mm-hmm. Now you need to be able to send your lands to the graveyard. Now you have lands that do that on their own, but not all of your lands will do that. So you need cards that are sack outlets, but sack outlets for lands.
Yeah. Historically, one of the worst cards for EDH.
Zurin, but in this deck, it is amazing.
Zurin Orb. It's from Ice Age. It's a zero drop artifact. Play it for free. It's got a zero cost ability. Sacrifice a land to gain two life. Seems so bad just
it
by
seems
the outset.
Horrible.
But then you place it next to this commander and it this becomes a beast.
This is doing... instant speed, create a 5/3, gain two life.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. For as many lands as
the fact that it's also zero to do it. I mean, it makes sense why it does cost zero, because it's just not an effect you would ever use in almost every other situation you can find yourself in. But in this, yeah, it's great.
I mean, with Xur'nor about, you can very often probably at least kill somebody because you just wait till the end step before your turn, sack all your lands. I mean, it's a risky play.
Yeah.
But if you got 8-9 lands out, you make 9 5/3s and you can probably kill at least one player that way.
Yeah, exactly. Especially because by that point in the game, someone's going to be below 30 life or whatever.
Yep. Another one I like is Fortitude. It's 1 and a green for an enchant creature. When Fortitude is put into a graveyard from play, return Fortitude to its owner's hand, which is great for enchantment because it's
kind of like
unless it gets exiled, it won't die. It's kind of like starts with an R.
It's the one that makes Rancor.
Rancor, yeah,
too bad
like
we
from Return of the Jedi.
that's true.
Okay, sorry. Back to the enchantment. So when it goes to the graveyard, it comes back to your hand, and enchanted creature. Oh, sorry. It says sacrifice a forest, regenerate enchanted creature. So this is great because it can protect Titania.
Yeah, there you go.
Because you're gonna find this is one of those decks that like is super reliant on his commander. So you're gonna want to protect her. This protects her in a way that also allows you to do the thing you want to do, which is sacrifice lands.
How'd you find this card? This card is perfect.
Yeah, that was a gatherer. It doesn't say sacrifice a land. I don't remember how I found it. I came across it somehow.
By the way, pro tip, gatherer.wizards.com is one of the best ways to start building a deck if you're just starting from scratch, because you can look up keywords. Like, you can look up the term sacrifice a land or sacrifice land, and then you can find all the cards that match within that color or whatever. And from there, it's really easy to find like a whole list. I mean, that's how I started with my Marchesa deck.
Right. Because
you're looking for things that have +1/+1 counters, you know, in the text.
Right. And I should say, Fortitude says sacrifice a forest. I probably looked up sacrifice a land, sacrifice a forest.
Yeah, yeah. Be diligent kind of about your search results as well.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Copperleaf Angel. I've never seen, Josh, I haven't seen half of these cards before.
I went deep, man.
I know, it's great. I'm so glad. It's a 5-drop artifact creature, Angel, 2/2. It has flying, but the most important part is you can tap it to sacrifice X lands. Put X +1/+1 counters on Copperleaf Angel. So once she is out for a turn or has haste, it is also a Xur'an Orb on the stick. That makes herself bigger, and she can fly over someone's head. But being able to sacrifice X lands is great.
Yeah, I mean, you want the sacrifice effect, but the fact that you can turn her into like some monstrous 12-12 flyer also.
And then have like 8 5/3s to help back you up.
The great thing is you can do that, and then you can play more lands and do it again because it's a tap effect. It's not like a one-time effect on her.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so you can really grow her into this thing that they have to deal with.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're right. You made a bunch of 5/3s also, so it's like... Yeah, there's a lot of icing on that cake.
This cake.
There's a lot of icing.
This forest cake tastes delicious.
The next card is a modern staple. There's a whole deck built around it, and it's probably the single most powerful card in the deck besides Titania, obviously. This is like one of the biggest win conditions. It's Scapeshift.
Oh, Scapeshift.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, it's 2 and 2 green. It's a sorcery. It says sacrifice any number of lands. Search your library for that many lands. Put them into play tapped, then shuffle your library.
Ugh.
So this is basically a free sack all your lands.
Yeah.
Which is a free however many lands you have, that many 5/3s. But the thing about this deck is then you put a whole bunch of lands into play, and then if you have a Xur'an Orb or something, you could sack them again. So, if you are Copperleaf Angel or any of these effects we just talked about. So all of a sudden, however many lands you have in play, you can make twice that many 5/3s.
Yeah.
Pretty intense. You don't have to have that many lands to just win in that instance.
Yeah, is it any lands too?
Yeah,
so that many land cards. So you could be grabbing Wastelands, you could be grabbing Dust Bowls, you can be grabbing anything you want with this. There's an entire modern deck built around Scapeshift and Valakut, the Molten Pinnacle.
Yep.
Because you just get to a point where you have enough
you combo them out.
Mountains, and then you just play Scapeshift, and then you play 7 mountains and deal, you know, 14 damage or whatever to their face. Yep. And so there's, an incredibly good card for a good reason. This last one, typically, so if this card just read 1 and a green, creatures deal no combat damage this turn, it would not be
good
in this deck. Yeah, not good. I mean, it feels good, right? Like, oh, I can imagine all the situations.
It's one of those classic effects that new players really love, and then the more you sort of learn to play Magic and the more you play, you learn that fog effects are just kind of bad because it's like, oh, you didn't die this turn, Jimmy. what happens next turn?
Yeah.
You die.
Yeah, exactly. So this bought you a turn, but it also takes up a card space in your deck, which could have been a card that may have done much better in winning you that game. Like, you know, for instance, like, would you rather have creatures deal no combat damage or pay some more mana and, like, board wipe, for instance, you know? But the reason that Constant Miss is great is it has buyback, which is you can do a cost, and then you get the card back into your hand instead of going to the graveyard. And to buy back this card, you sacrifice a land.
Which you want to do anyway.
You want to do anyway. Actually, and this has so much more value when you can repeat it constantly and get something else out of it.
Actually, when I was looking through and I found this card, I think this card belongs in a lot of EDH decks. Mm-hmm. Because how many times, depending on your meta, but you usually die to a big creature strike. Now, whether that's one creature hitting you for a lot or if it's a thousand tokens.
Yeah.
But if somebody Kiki-Jiki infinites you, this stops it.
Yep.
Also, if somebody does a Rafik Voltron, this stops it.
Yeah.
And how many times would you be like, well, I'll pay a land to just survive.
I have like eight in play already. Yeah. It doesn't stop me from playing something else next turn.
Yeah, exactly. Usually, you don't need to use this on turn four or five where it would actually hurt you that much. And even if you did, you'll usually gladly pay one of your lands in play just to not die.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And then you can do it again. And by the way, they know you have it now. And they have to either play around it, or a lot of times they'll just be like, well, I know you have Constant Mist, and so I'm going to attack you with all my dudes. And what I'm basically doing is saying, attack you with all my stuff to kill one of your lands.
Yeah.
A lot of times that'll just defer aggression to somebody else.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's a very underrated card. It probably
in some fringe cases, too, that can also save your commander.
Yeah.
If it's like a planeswalker.
Like they do some sort of weird trick.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Untap their guy that you thought couldn't block, and all of a sudden your guy's going to die, and you can go like, okay, Constant Mist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or if you have planeswalkers out, you know, can stop them from, you know, because that'd be great. Like,
yep.
Your planeswalker's about to ult. They're like, no, we'll just deal with it when he gets to 9, before he gets to 10, and then you just Constant Mist 4 times in a row. And
it's
then
probably really good in a Super Friends deck.
Yeah, yeah, I can definitely see that happening.
Yeah, because they can't attack your planeswalkers after that, yeah.
Yeah, so sack outlets for your lands. Definitely kind of a fringe case of cards in Magic, but in this specific scenario, very, very good.
Okay, so the next category, I guess, is okay. So you've got a bunch of lands out in play. Then you put them all in the graveyard. Now you want to take them from the graveyard and put them back into play. You want to recur them. The most famous one is Crucible of Worlds.
Definitely.
Yeah. This is actually, I had this foil Crucible of Worlds like sitting there for a long time, and it's been in some commander decks because it's a staple. I mean, you just sort of, you can put it in any deck because it's anti land destruction.
Yep.
But I was like, oh, this deck. Like Crucible World is like linchpin in this deck.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what it says is it's a 3-drop artifact. It says you may play land cards from your graveyard. That's it. So you can just, your one land per turn, you can take it from the graveyard and put it in. Yeah. Although this deck likes to play 4 lands per turn.
Yeah, you have Azusa
out. And then
out.
Sacrifice them and play 4 lands the next turn.
You Zurin Orb all of them and you could play all of them and sack them all again. Yeah, that Crucible of Worlds is, I mean, I would almost want to run protection for Crucible of Worlds.
I mean, it's very such, important.
Yeah, it's such an important card.
Well, luckily you're in green. You have regrowths and things that can get other cards out of your graveyard. And
yeah, absolutely.
So you can, you know, unless they exile it, you're good.
Yeah, and one card in particular that's great for sort of returning itself in the same way that Constant Mist does is another one of the more famous cards, which is Life from the Loam.
Oh yeah, these two are probably after Scapeshift the most powerful cards.
Yeah, it's one in the green for a sorcery. Return up to 3 target land cards from your graveyard to your hand. So it does exactly what you want. Puts stuff back into your hand, so you can play them again. And it has Dredge 3, which is why it's so good. And instead of drawing a card, if you would draw a card, you can pay exactly 3 cards from the top of your library into your graveyard, and you can return this card to your hand.
So then you can cast it again, get 3 more lands and then your next turn.
Yeah. Not to mention you're going to be dredging other lands into your graveyard, so it creates its own repeating cycle depending on what you put in your bin. So even if you have nothing in there, you would still dredge it and just like, well, you know, I'm going to need it at some point. And
100%. It's a really great card. Once you get Life from the Loam out, you're basically putting a minimum like 3/5/3s into play every turn. yeah, it's just really for 2 mana and some sac outlet stuff, but it's going to be really hard for people to keep up with that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's a very, very powerful card. There's some other cards. I'm going to use this one as an example, but there are many cards like this. Creatures with Enter the Battlefield effects. This one says, it's called Cartographer. It's 2 and a green for a 2/2. It says, when Cartographer comes into play, you may return target land card from your graveyard to your hand. So
nice.
It's like Eternal Witness. Mm-hmm. Eternal Witness just lets you bring any card from your graveyard to your hand. This says land specifically. There are many cards like that, and I'm not sure how many you should run, but you need some.
Yeah, I mean, that on top of regrowth and stuff. This next one is one actually a card that I Craig introduced me to, and I think is something that should go in almost, again, every green deck if you can. It's Creeping Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
3 and 2 green, 5 total. Sorcery, choose a permanent type. Return all cards of the chosen type from your graveyard to your hand. And you can flashback it one more time for 7 mana instead of 5, and you get to exile the card, but you do the same thing again.
So what card type are you going to choose, Jimmy?
Creatures?
I think land. I think land.
Yeah. Creeping Renaissance is great, too, because if you are in a really sticky situation where, let's say, you have other ways of getting lands back,
mm-hmm.
you have Life from the Loam, you have Crucible of Worlds, this gives you the option to return something else. Like, yep. Well, let's just say, like, someone gets rid of your Crucible of Worlds, Creeping Renaissance will get your artifacts back as well.
Yep, you say artifacts, get it back. And the great thing about it is, like, then once you get to 7 mana, you can cast it with a flashback cost and then still get
land.
Your lands.
Yeah. So it's great. It's got 2 uses total, and you can pretty much bounce anything you want.
So those are the get your lands back from your graveyard category. And next, we are making tokens. So at its heart, it's still a token deck.
Yeah, that's what I find really interesting.
Yeah, and there are 2 cards that belong in every single token deck, and we've talked about them many times. They're Doubling Season and Parallel Lives.
Nice.
They're both enchantments. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but they basically double the amount of tokens you make in this deck. Doubling Season also doubles the amount of 1/1 counters you put on stuff, but that doesn't matter for here. So
that's specifically for Planeswalkers and stuff. It affects that a lot more.
Yeah, and there's some fringe cases where it also works on other stuff. But in general, so now your fetch land says, sacrifice it, put 2 5/3s into play, and go find a land and put it into play.
Hold on, you still have to pay 1 life, though. That's,
oh, sorry.
That's a hefty cost.
That's my bad. Well, if the fetch land is Evolving Wilds, you don't. So anyway, we've talked about them a lot. We'll move on, but
yeah,
they belong in the deck.
Time to pump your tokens.
Yeah, so you're going to make 20 tokens on your end step.
And we're not talking about Overrun here. We're talking about stuff that is win the game effects.
Yes.
Because Overrun doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win. These cards, however, you're going to win.
I mean, you're making 5/3s. Usually in token decks, you're making 1/1s.
Uh-huh.
So in a regular token deck, you need a few more pump spells because sometimes your 1/1s, you're just, you know, you're not going to be able to make enough of them to kill everybody. But since you're making 5/3s, you can sort of take a little emphasis off the pump spell because you only need to make 8 to have enough damage to kill somebody. Now, that's barring blockers and whatnot.
Right.
So we only need the very best pump spells.
Yep. And Coat of Arms is one that we've talked about in
many podcasts.
Our Prosh deck as well. It basically gives each of your creatures +1/+1 for each other creature that I think shares a creature type with it.
Yeah, it's a 5-drop artifact.
Yeah. So in this case, all elementals will be busted up, including Titania herself, by the way, which is cool because the commander is affected by that specifically, which is kind of cool.
I mean, let's say you make 10 5/3s and then you put Coat of Arms out.
Ugh.
Yeah, so now they're all plus nine.
Yeah,
so they're all 14 power. And Titania is 14 power, so that's 14 commander damage to somebody. She might be able to just kill somebody, you know, finish somebody off while the tokens go finish the other people off.
Yeah.
So it's super powerful. That's if there's only 10. Like, that's, a modest amount.
And it keeps them at that. It's not like an overrun that ends at the end of your turn or...
Yeah, as long as Coat of Arms is out. It's the only bad thing about Coat of Arms is it does it for your opponent's creatures, too. So if you're playing against a goblin deck or an elf deck or something like that, you'll pump all their guys.
Yeah.
But
usually,
you don't drop Coat of Arms until it's like, put Coat of Arms into play. I win,
yeah.
Yeah, I attack everyone and kill everyone.
Yeah.
Okay, and the other really good pump spell... again, we're not sure the ratios. Maybe there would need to be more than 2, but I feel like 2 or 3 is probably as many as you need in this deck.
Right.
And the other sort of best one is Craterhoof Behemoth.
Oh, such a good card.
Awesome card. It's a 5/5 for 5 and 3 green, so 8 mana total. It's a creature beast. It has haste. And it says, when Craterhoof Behemoth enters the battlefield, creatures you control get trample and +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of creatures you control.
Yeah.
Nothing says I win quite like saying, oh, I've got 10, 15, 15s with trample.
Yeah, the trample bit is what really makes this big because someone could just chump lock all day or whatever, but the damage is getting through. And Craterhoof is the perfect name. He's using his hoof to make a crater sized.
In your face.
In your face, yeah.
Plus he's a 5/5. And he gets he's got haste, and he gets the bump too. So he also just swings in there and helps kill everybody. Yeah,
yeah,
very powerful card.
Yeah,
especially
if you can bounce him.
Yeah, just use him again. This deck's not really built to do that, but you can get him back out of your graveyard.
Yeah, there you go.
So there's 2 categories we always talk about. The great thing about this deck is the ramp category. We think every EDH deck basically needs ramp. This one, it already has you covered with the stuff it wants to do anyway.
Yeah.
All those cards that let you play more than one land per turn, that like go search for more lands and put them into play, all this stuff, those are your ramp cards.
Yeah.
So you don't actually need the ramp category to be covered. You're already covered. So, but we do need card draw. There's some interesting ones. One of my favorites is Horn of Greed. Horn of Greed is a 3-drop artifact. It says whenever any player plays a land, that player draws a card. So it's kind of like Seer's Sundial from earlier, where Seer's Sundial only works for yourself, but it costs 2 mana when you play a land.
Right.
This one, if you play a land, you get to draw a card. Now it works on your opponents, but your opponents don't have Exploration, Burgeoning, Azusa.
Right, you're going to be
They can only play one per turn.
Yeah.
But you can play 3 or 4 lands per turn. Plus, you're getting them back out of your graveyard and playing them again.
Mm-hmm.
So Horn of Greed, super powerful in this
deck. It's definitely a bit of a riskier play. And I like cards in EDH that do that because they issue a challenge to the player, which is like you are... It's sort of like your Nekusar Chromat deck, which is like everyone's going to be drawing cards. Everyone's going to be potentially getting the answers to beat you in a certain way. But you are hopefully doing it more efficiently because your deck is built to take advantage of this more than theirs is.
And another thing we didn't really talk about that... is that this deck will play more lands than your average EDH deck. Mm-hmm. Like, your average EDH deck might have 37, 38 lands. This one probably has 45, maybe 48 lands.
Oh, wow, interesting, yeah.
So your chance to draw a land after off of Horn of Greed and play it again and draw another card, you know.
It's very high.
So if you have Azusa and Orc of Moldiah and something else into play, there's a good chance that you just draw land, put it into play, draw land, and just put four lands into play and sort of string them together where your opponents won't be able to do that.
Yeah.
So it's just like, yeah, they get one card per turn maybe. But you have the chance to get 4 or 5 cards per turn. I mean, it's like there's no advantage for them there. It's all
pretty busted in that case. Arcane Spyglass, again, another card I've never seen.
This card belongs in more decks again than
I really like this too. I think people are afraid of land destruction, both from other people and from themselves.
But how many more games so do you play where you're like, oh, I have 15 lands to play? That's not doing anything for me. I would gladly give up 5 of these to draw cards or something.
Yeah. Like, you know, you're so desperate, like, heck, I'll sacrifice 6 just to get one card. That's fine. Just give me a card. Yeah, Arcane Spyglass, 4-drop artifact. You pay 2 mana and tap it to sacrifice a land, draw a card, and put a charge counter on Arcane Spyglass. Remove 3 charge counters from Arcane Spyglass, draw a card. So every 3 lands, you get an extra card. So
you get 4 cards draw for every 3 lands you sacrifice.
Yeah, if you have Doubling Season out, this goes twice as fast.
Yes. So it's very, very powerful. Again, you're sacking lands already. You want stuff that sack lands. So this one draws cards when you sack lands, which is one of the better things you can do. There's also Kavu Lair. It's 2 and a green for an enchantment. It says whenever a creature with power 4 or greater comes into play, its controller draws a card. So this works for it works for other players.
People, yeah.
But your fetch lands say what?
Oh God!
Sacrifice a land. Search your library. 4 land. Put it into play. Put a 5/3 into play and draw a card.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super powerful.
And a Parallel Lives is out. Just x2 everything on that.
Yep.
Jeez Louise. Yeah, I mean, definitely, like, some decks would just never be able to use that card, too, you know? Like, for instance, Craig's Mono Blue Tower on
Never putting deck. A 4/4 into play.
Yeah, it'll never benefit off of that. So you do have that sort of fringe benefit as well, which is kind of cool.
Even decks like Prosh.
Yeah.
You know, they're not playing a bunch of really big creatures. You know,
outside of Prosh himself,
yeah, exactly. He's going to draw one card once in a while. But
yeah,
you're gonna...
and he'll bust them up and make them all stronger, but that doesn't give him cards because they're not entering the battlefield.
Maybe this is more a bigger topic, but we should talk about, like, I've always been very open to the cards that give a nominal benefit to your opponents, but a big benefit to you. But I feel like a lot of players fear those cards.
Right. You know, it just feels like a bad move. Right.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm getting benefit, but so are my opponents. But it's like, how much benefit are you getting? Because if your deck is built to get maximum benefit out of something, and it just sort of like incidentally gives a little bit of benefit to everybody else, that's fine.
That's totally fine. Yeah. And especially even because at that point, like, all their benefits added up together still isn't more than the benefit you're getting off the card. So
right, exactly. And, you know, making people putting a spell into play that helps people draw cards sometimes. That doesn't make them mad at you, so it doesn't paint a target at you.
Yeah.
Even though it's incrementally giving you an advantage.
Yeah.
They don't, like, there's most things in the game that give you advantage actually cause people to dislike you.
Yeah.
This does the opposite.
That's the time that I make an ally with that person because I know that, like,
I want to draw cards.
I want to draw cards. I know it's giving them more benefit than me, and even if I can remove that thing, like, I'd rather not, because if it means that they can kill someone else before I can, then that might leave them open or whatever.
Right.
It gives me more of an edge to scoot in at that point. So it's like you can play on both sides of the political spectrum there.
Okay, so we always talk about cards you may not think of. So along the lines of what we were just talking about, I put Font of Mythos. It's one of my favorite cards. It's a 4-drop artifact. It says at the beginning of each player's draw step, that player draws two additional cards. Now, here's my thinking here. The thing that holds you back when you're drawing a massive amount of cards, like when every player is, is your land drop.
Right.
See, because what happens is if everybody's drawing 3 or 4 cards a turn,
they're going to have to discard.
Yeah, they just don't have enough mana to play that many cards. So it actually, after like 3 cards or 4 cards, every card you draw after that is actually not that useful. I mean, it's selection.
Yeah.
But as far as like, you can't play that many things in one turn.
Right, right.
However, in a deck with a whole bunch of effects that let you put more lands into play every turn, you're getting incremental advantage because, you know, on my turn, I play 3 lands, and then so I'm 2 turns ahead of everybody. But then on the next turn, I play 5 lands, and now I'm 8 turns ahead of everybody, you know, and it just can be the snowballing thing. So for your deck to be able to take advantage of something, because lands, you know, you if you have something, an enabler like an Azusa or something, lets you, they don't cost you mana.
Yeah.
You just put them on at the table.
Yeah.
So, and also you need to get those effects that let you drop more lands into play. And the best way to find them in green, because they're not creature-based.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is almost kind of like your own tutor, in a way. Because you're making your card. I mean, that is one way to tutor, is just draw cards until
just
you
draw
find...
a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, until you find the card you want. So that's great. I like Font of Mythos. I like seeing it every time it pops up. Concordant Crossroads. This is a 1-drop card that sometimes just says you win the game.
It's another card like we were just talking about, too, because it gives your opponents benefit, but... Yeah. You're in control of when you play it.
Yep.
So, oh, so sorry, we didn't read it. So.
Oh yeah, that's right. 1 green mana. It says Enchant World. Not too many cards.
That's
say
an
that.
Old school.
Old
wording.
School. Yeah. Creatures can attack or use abilities that include tap mana. So basically, every creature has haste.
Yeah. Your opponents also.
Yeah. But you're not going to play this. Like I play this in my Rafik deck because oftentimes I'll like put out the card that like great I need this Cold Eyed Selkie to hit someone right now and draw me some cards, and or like I need this commander to get in for this damage right now because I have to recast Rafik, and for 1 mana you can give everything haste. It feels really unbalanced in terms of the power level of what this is, especially in a multiplayer game.
It's way overpowered, but it's sort of like supposed to be balanced because it gives it to your opponent too.
Right.
But if it's
your turn, then it doesn't really help your opponents out that much.
It doesn't help them if they're dead.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the whole point of Concordant Crossroads, is you don't play it if you're going to allow them to have a turn after this one, you know, or at least allow more than one player to have a turn after this one. So, you know, a lot of times you're going to do that thing where you can sacrifice a whole bunch of lands and put like 25 threes into play. And then you just need to be able to attack with them right now so nobody has a chance to do anything about it.
Yeah.
And for 1 green mana, Concordant Crossroads lets you do that.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in a bit, but board wipes are not fun for this deck.
There's another card, and it's another card I want to put on the underrated. We're going to have to do a whole show on underrated
cards,
I keep talking about this.
Swan Song.
It's called Thawing Glaciers.
Oh, yeah.
This belongs in way more decks. And in this deck, it's very powerful. So Thawing Glaciers is a land. It comes into play tapped. It says tap 1 and tap Thawing Glaciers. Search your library for a basic land and put it into play tapped. This does not count towards your 1 land per turn limit. Shuffle your library afterwards. At the end of turn, return Thawing Glacier to owner's hand. So... what this does is every other turn you
is
can
this
search
the best
for a
card
land.
From Alliances?
It might be. Alliances was a really bad set. Hey, I have a box of Alliances we're going to have to draft one of these days.
Well, hopefully I'll pop over the Thawing Glaciers then.
I want to mix it in with Fallen Empires, the 2 worst sets ever.
Oh, gosh.
Do a draft.
We're going to be yawning at the table.
Like every creature is like a 5 mana, 2-3. Like, yeah. It's just horrible.
And then one modern, and then one Modern Masters booster pack. Just
whoever
skew.
Gets that just wins.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing about Thawing Glaciers is, so it basically lets you go search your library for a land and put it into play every other turn.
Yeah.
But this isn't counting effects that let you play more than 1 land per turn.
Oh, right. So you can just play it back.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, there you go.
So
okay.
You use it, play it in the same turn, use it the next turn, play it in the same turn, use it
definitely.
The next turn, play it in the same turn. So that can definitely happen when you're playing multiple lands. And then it's very, very powerful. It's also powerful, not necessarily for this deck, but with untap effects. Untap permanent, untap land effects. Because notice it says at end of turn, return Thawing Glacier to owner's hand.
Right.
So if you have a Voyaging Satyr, you tap 1 and tap this, search your land, put it into play, tapped. Then you use the Voyaging Satyr to untap the Thawing Glacier, use it again. So you could potentially use it 3-4 times in a turn.
Right.
Go find 3-4 lands, and then it returns to your hand. Yeah, it's very underutilized. And it works in any deck. It's not color specific.
Yeah, I like that. This next card, Natural Balance, is very similar to a white card called Balance, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's 2/2 green, sorcery. And this is another card that normally you just laugh at and throw away and not put in the deck. Each player controlling 6 or more lands sacrifices enough lands to reduce his or her land total to 5. Boy, you're going to get a lot of hate there. Each player controlling 4 or fewer lands may search his or her library for enough basic land to bring her land total to 5 and put those lands into play, and then everyone shuffles their libraries. So it says bring everyone to 5. For you, it says make an arbitrary number of 5/3s.
It says make a ton of tokens, and also, by the way, sacrifice all your lands right after you play this because you're going to be able to go get 5 anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of cool because this is a card that really shuts down the board and puts it heavily in your favor because it's like sacrifice all those lands, now I play 3 more or whatever.
I mean, what better thing could you do after you put like 6 or 7 5/3s into play than make everybody sacrifice down to 5 lands?
It's yeah.
Like, not only did I just put a ton of power on the table, I also gimped your ability to do anything about it because you don't have as much land now.
Yeah. That's definitely, I think, one of the game winners right there.
Yeah. It's well, the great thing about this deck is all these cards that like you sacrifice your own lands and such, they're not like typically cards that people play.
Yeah.
So they're not expensive. I mean, most of these cards are under $1. I mean, Crucible of Worlds is expensive. A couple of the other ones,
Scapeshift and stuff,
get up
yeah.
there. But most of these cards, the large bulk of them are just like 32 cents. I mean, they're very cheap. A lot of them are. So
yeah, it's not asking you to buy all the fetch lands either, because the quote unquote fetch lands, half of them are just commons.
Evolving Wilds is a common. Yeah. So yeah. And you don't need to go out and spend on the $50 fetch lands. That's going to be 2 cards in your deck, 3 cards in your deck. It's just not worth it.
Yeah. There's a lot of other cards that do similar stuff.
Yeah, for sure. For a lot cheaper. So it's not the... Those fetch lands are very specific for why they cost that much. You just actually need the sacrifice the land, find a land part, and there's a lot of cards that do that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about some trap cards.
Yep.
Some cards that maybe aren't so great. I know I talked about Nykthos, Shrine to Nyx.
And how it should be in all these decks. However, Titania, not so much.
Yeah, exactly. Because most of your permanents are lands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all your other permanents, like go find lands and such, you're just not putting a bunch of green pips out onto the table.
Yeah.
So Nykthos is just not a very great, it's just not super efficient in your deck. I mean, it might be okay, but again, you want to sacrifice your lands, you know, it's just, I don't know. I don't think it's good in this deck, even though it's a monocolored deck.
I agree. Another card that it would seem would be really good would be Terravor, 1/2 green for a Lurgoyf. So you know it's coming in as a star/star creature. It has trample. Terravor's power and toughness are equal to the number of land cards in all graveyards. Seems good on the outset, but it's missing a lot of the stuff that makes so many other cards better than it. For instance, if this card says something like, when Terravor enters play, sacrifice 2 lands. Mm-hmm, or, you know, or like tap Terravor, sacrifice a land. Mm-hmm. The problem is it's just too situational on just being a creature that has trample and is star-star. Because I'd say that for the most part, the things that Titanias are pumping out are much more effective. You'd rather have 3 5/3s than 1 8/8, you know?
Yes, exactly. That's that's very well put. I think, you know, these type of cards make it into a lot of decks like this because you're like, I'm going to have a 20/20 guy, and what are they going to do? Well, they're going to kill it or they're going to block it. You know, it's way harder to deal with an army of 5/3s than it is to deal with like one, you know, 30/30 creature.
Right, right.
So
even if it does have trample, it's like Path to Exile. So it's the Plowshares. You know, there's so many ways to just get rid of one creature.
Yep. Yep. Or Maze of Ith. Everybody plays Maze of Ith. Like it's just, I would stay away from effects like that that sort of create one really big creature. There's another one, and I think it's okay, but I chose not to put it in. Do you want to read it?
Oh, Strionic Resonator?
Yeah.
Yeah. This finds its way into a lot of decks, too, for EDH, for good reason. 2-drop artifact. You can pay 2 and tap it. Copy target triggered ability you control. You may choose new targets for the copy. And a triggered ability uses the words when, whenever, or at.
So it's basically going to copy Titania's Enter the Battlefield effect and mostly the trigger that when you when one of your lands goes to the graveyard, you make a 5/3.
Yeah.
So once per round,
if
you sacrifice a land, you get an extra 5/3.
Yeah.
And that's the point, I think, why I didn't put it in and I don't think it's powerful enough, is like one extra token per round of the table.
Yeah.
For 2 mana is just not a big enough effect when you've got stuff like Scapeshift, which literally puts like as many 5/3s into play as you have lands, or Doubling Season, which double every time you make a 5/3, you make another one. Like, yeah. Strionic Resonator is just not powerful.
It's enough. Good in some decks when you really need to double something and your deck is like really looking to do that specifically. But in this mm-hmm. case, it's like there are just better ways to get. It's the same kind of argument for Terravor, where it's just there are more ways to get out more stuff.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about how to fight the Titania deck.
Ah, yes.
It's a kind of a fragile deck because when I started thinking of ways you would fight it, I came up with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Number one is Graveyard Hate, because they're going to be sacking their lands and then putting them back into play. Now, you won't turn off the deck 100% if you hate it out the graveyard, but you'll really hurt their ability to sort of continue to...
Yeah,
to
I mean, it shuts down Life from the Loam. Yeah. It shuts down so many cards that... Worlds. Crucible, yeah. Creeping Renaissance.
Yeah.
Cards that you need to work.
And in order to really, like, have the engine working, you need this circular effect of, like, land comes into play, land goes to graveyard, land comes in my hand, land goes into play, mm-hmm. land... You know, you need that land to sort of go in that circle. And so if you just take out... You just dam it up at the graveyard part where it just won't come out of their graveyard... Yeah. Then it's very hard for the deck to be like broken powerful. It can still do some stuff, but yeah. That'll slow it down a lot.
Tuck is a pretty obvious one.
Tuck, because without Titania or Rampaging Baelots is your only hope.
Yeah.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
There are some cards in this deck that help it function without Titania, but it really does rely on Titania's ability because it's so specific. There are two parts to it that make her...
All your stuff that sacrifices lands, like,
yeah.
You know, it's all that stuff's pretty crappy if it doesn't also make a 5/3 when you do it.
Yeah, I don't think there are many cards out there that actually give you like something like Titania does, like an enchantment or whatever that rewards you for sacrificing lands.
Yeah, not that I found. Maybe our listeners can come up with a few more because yeah. I think that's the big hole in the deck. Basically, Rampaging Baelots and Spore Mound. Mm-hmm. Spore Mound, whenever you play a land, you get a 1/1.
Oh, okay.
It's like something.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a Young Pyromancer, but instead of instants and sorceries, it's lands. But it needs a couple more effects like that because, as we've talked about many times in the past, we like to build redundancy into our EDH deck so that it has a chance. It has some cards that let it win, even if the commander is not in play.
I think the issue here is that Titania's ability says whenever a land you control is put into the graveyard, right?
Yes.
And a lot of the cards here are just sacrificing lands, which it has the same end result,
right?
But it isn't what you're trying to. You know, it doesn't tie up to what Titania says. So it's like, if Titania is gone, then there aren't that many cards that really help you do what she does.
Yeah, I mean. You're going to be sacrificing your lands. You can still do that, but it doesn't do anything then.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
just like, yeah. The good thing is you're in green. We'll talk later about how to sort of combat all this stuff that's fighting you. The third way to fight this deck is instant speed wraths or instant speed mass bounce.
Right.
So that's the stuff that works against token decks in general.
This one especially, though, needs to have instant speed because there's so many things in here that will, at instant speed, like...
Yeah, because all these sac lands, like, you can do it on an end step.
Yeah.
So unlike a lot of token decks, you're not doing it at sorcery speed a lot of the time. Like Zurn Orb, that's just anytime you want to.
Yeah.
So you're going to sacrifice all your lands on the end step before your turn.
Yeah,
so,
you need like Nev's Disc to really hose this deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like Cyclonic Rift does it.
Right.
Or Faded Retribution is a big wrath effect in white that's instant. You know, you can do it, but you need instant speed. Yeah, you know, wrath or mass bounce to mess with them.
Yeah, definitely. Meddling Mage type effects. Meddling Mage is a card that says when it comes into play, you name a card, that card cannot be played. So it's similar to just, it's not Graveyard Hate, it's Commander Hate. And it's a card that if you don't have a way to get rid of it immediately, you could be set back very, you know, like 3 or 4 turns, just trying to find a way to get rid of that or hoping someone else does. And the thing about Meddling Mage is that if someone casts it targeting your stuff, it's up to you to get rid of it.
Else cares.
Yeah, everyone else will be like, oh, thanks, man, for that. Cool. Like, you're going to be the first person to come after when they get rid of it, but no one else has any incentive to waste a card on their Meddling Mage that's not targeting them.
Yeah, because it's like, well, my commander, he didn't name my commander, so why should I kill it? I don't care. And also, Meddling Mage specifically for green, like, mono green just doesn't have a lot of, like, kill target creatures.
Yeah, there, like, was that one that was printed in the...
It turns it into a basic forest.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that is Song of the Dryads,
and then you play Natural Balance and they're forced to sacrifice it.
Well, it doesn't have any abilities after it's a forest, so it doesn't stop your thing from coming into play anymore, but there's very few cards in green that, like, just kill a reach out and kill a creature.
So
Meddling Mage specifically is tough. Nevermore is an enchantment version of Meddling Mage.
Mm-hmm.
it would still hurt you. But you're in green, so you can have some enchantment removal. But
yeah.
But without Titania, the deck is very, very soft. So yeah. Another thing is control magic effects. Because if they steal your Titania, you're kind of hosed. Like,
yeah.
Again, because you don't... Normally, in a normal EDH deck, they steal your commander. It sucks, but you go, all right, I path to exile my own freaking thing. So I can put it back in the command zone and cast it again.
Yeah.
But you're in green. You don't have a lot of ways to kill a creature to begin with. So if they take your creature, it can be tough.
Yeah, very tough.
Yeah. And then...
mass creature hate.
Yeah, so I sort of created this subcategory recently in my head. And is stuff that hates out, like, mass creature strategies, like token strategies.
Yeah.
Yeah, so propaganda.
Right. Propaganda says you have to pay one extra for each attacking creature for each land type that you control.
Propaganda is just two extra per creature.
That's right. Yeah, you're right.
But there is one like that. I forget what it's called. There's a number of effects that basically say for every creature that somebody wants to attack you with, they have to pay mana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it shuts down token decks because it's like, you want to attack with 15 guys? Do you have 30 mana?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, no.
No, I don't. I have 8 mana. I'll attack this other guy instead.
Yeah.
And that's actually the great thing about mass creature hate. Is that it doesn't actually deflect all creatures from doing stuff. It just deflects them from attacking you.
Yeah.
So a lot of times their answer is like, all right, I'll attack the other guy then because I don't have enough mana to attack you.
Yeah. And a lot of slower, more dirtly decks make use of this heavily because they know that they're going to die to creatures or whatever. And the way to stop that is like propaganda or crawl space or ghostly prison. That's sort of
stuff. Silent Arbiter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Propaganda is my favorite one of those because it stops like... if people don't hate you for it. Like,
yeah.
Silent Arbiter can slow the game to the point where everyone's like, I'm just going to kill the guy with Silent Arbiter so the game can progress normally now.
Yeah, exactly.
But propaganda doesn't stop anyone else from attacking each other. It just stops them from attacking you. It also stops infinite kiki-jiki shenanigans and stuff like that. So
yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about how not to fight Titania. The first one I put is usually what people go to, and it's counter magic.
Right.
And the reason I would say that is because counterspells don't counter lands.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do anything against lands.
Especially, and also, like, sure, you counter Titania.
That's
like,
it, yeah.
Yeah, but it's also like, hey, guess what? I'm still playing 8 lands a turn or whatever. I'm just going to play her next turn.
Again.
Yeah, it's like, I can outplay your counters because I have so much ramp in this deck.
Exactly. And then once I get her out, you can't counter most of the other stuff I'm doing because you can't counter a fetch land.
Yep.
You know, so...
we could stifle it, I guess.
Yeah, then they'll be like, okay, next turn I'll do like,
yeah,
or I'll do one
of
my
other things,
or I'll
do,
Zurn
yeah.
Orb or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah.
Basically, single target removal, single target counters aren't as effective in a deck that's trying to go wide.
Totally.
Yeah. Now, a counterspell is good if you know that a Craterhoof Behemoth is the only thing that they can play at this point to win the game or whatever, but I think there are enough options in this deck that a single counter isn't going to save the day for you. It might delay the inevitable, but it's not going to stop you. Like having life gain versus this deck is also just completely useless.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Sorcery Speed Wrath's also very bad because, like we said, they're going to do this stuff where they do it on the Aran step. A lot of it can be done at instant speed, so... your Sorcery Speed Wrath is going to be sitting in your hand while they're attacking you with, you know, 25 threes, and you're like, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, if I made it to my turn, I would have killed them all, but now I'm dead.
Actually, what do you think about land destruction? Is that a good way to fight Titania?
I think that's a horrible way to fight Titania. You just give her a bunch of 5/3s, and then she has more cards than any other deck to get her lands back out of her
graveyard.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So, guys, another reason not to run land destruction.
Okay, now if you're playing the Titania deck, here's some ways to sort of combat the stuff that works good against you. So you're going back to all the stuff we said about Graveyard Hate, Tuck, Instant Speed Wraths, Meddling Mage type effects. Tutors.
Yep.
Creature tutors specifically. Now, you might not think you want a lot of these because you don't have a lot of creatures in the deck because you're planning on making your lands into your creatures by sacrificing them.
Right.
But you do want Worldly Tutor. I think Natural Order is a really good one.
Yeah,
and
yeah, definitely.
There's two reasons also, not just Tuck effects that take Titania and put her into your deck, but also like at a certain point, you just need to go find that Craterhoof Behemoth so you can win.
Yeah.
So if Titania is out and everything's going peachy, then you just, and you draw Worldly Tutor, awesome. Because now it's like, oh, instead of just getting myself back in the game, I'll just win the game. I'll go get Craterhoof Behemoth.
Mm-hmm. Card like Tooth and Nail, equally powerful, because you just need to be able to grab that stuff and put it into play. Being able to drop Craterhoof Behemoth will win you the game.
Mm-hmm. Natural Order is great because you just sack one of the tokens. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you actually put Crater of Behemoth.
Yeah, same with Pattern of Rebirth.
Yep.
And sometimes it's not even just like, it's not even getting the card that wins you the game, but sometimes you just need to grab Azusa or someone.
Just
because
I need to start playing more lands per turn.
Yeah, exactly. Just so it's like you need ways to get your engine going.
Yep.
And the faster that happens, the faster you win.
Soul of New Phyrexia.
Any token deck needs this card.
Yes, because it just protects you from Wraths.
Yeah.
Or protects you from a Wrath.
Twice over.
Yeah, so it's very powerful, and you have so much ramp in this deck. This is one of the few decks where you can actually probably play the Soul of New Phyrexia and still have enough mana left on that turn to activate it.
If you need to.
Soul of New Phyrexia is an artifact, and it has an activated ability for 5, and it makes all your creatures indestructible.
Yeah, and considering you're going to be holding up mana anyway because you want to do a lot of end step shenanigans.
Yes, exactly.
It's okay to have that up, and it's good to have it up.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, Enchantment Destruction. I just think, like, you're in green, Krosan Grip, that kind of stuff. You're going to need a few. You don't want Control Magics, and you don't want, you know, Nevermores. It's just good to have anyway.
Yeah.
Artifact and Enchantment Destruction.
You definitely need it.
Yeah, it's just, and if they play Propaganda or something, like, you can't win unless you kill that Propaganda. Like,
yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, you can, but it's just going to be harder, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's another good thing. And then the last thing is, and green doesn't have a lot, but it does have some. You want spot removal.
Yep. And whether it's spot removal, like artifact spot removal or green card spot removal, you every commander deck needs spot removal.
Yeah. And green's just harder. I just wanted to put a point on it because green doesn't have a lot,
mm-hmm.
but it, you know, there's going to be creatures on the battlefield like Meddling Mage or, you know, other things that's like, man, if that Silent Arbiter, if that creature sits there, I'm just hosed.
Yeah.
But it's hard for green to reach out and just kill something. Like, it's easy for black.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy for white. They Swords to Plowshares it, but you just don't have access to that stuff. So you need to sort of pointedly be like, yep, I need some spot removal in this deck.
Yeah. Not to mention, if your politics aren't good enough to tell someone else to kill something, you're going to need that. I find that that's another fake card that exists whenever I play EDH, which is your ability to convince someone else to do something that they think is in their favor, but is ultimately mostly in yours.
It's very wisely said. And when you become good at that aspect of the game, you actually build your decks differently. Like, I have less spot removal in my decks because I always figure, well, I'm just going to have to manipulate somebody else to do that. Because I don't want to waste cards in my deck on that.
Yeah, exactly.
But I do need that effect. So the way that I'm going to get it is through my own manipulation and social guile.
Yeah.
So let's... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, everyone... In a five-player game, someone's going to have spot removal in their hands.
Oh, yeah.
Especially, the other thing is... I mean, the big thing is, like, it's not just you telling them to get rid of it.
Right.
If it's four people being like, dude.
You've got to kill that thing.
Kill it now. And, like, they're like, do it or I'll attack you.
I mean, we play, you know, you play in a lot of games, and especially when we were at the GP and we were playing with random people, and, you know, people come in all shapes and sizes, but in a commander game, you can't be afraid to sort of speak.
Oh, yeah.
And you see people, and they're, you know, Magic's a game, and not everybody's, like, socially, like, what's the word? Not everybody is like an outgoing person.
Yeah, there you go.
And so, you know, you need to sort of get over that a little because it does help you in the game. And, and it's part of Commander to just be like, hey, man, can you kill that thing? Because it's going to screw everybody at the table, and I don't have a way to do it.
Yeah,
and,
greater good sort of thing.
And a lot of times you're like, hey, listen, I'll give you something. I won't attack you, or what do you want me to do? But we need that thing to die.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a way to do it, I'll trade you or something, you know, and you just have to be able to have that discussion.
You open your trade binder on the side. Like, look, man, anything, you just take it, man. Just
one
thing.
That's not what I meant. I meant trade you like I'll let you draw a card or, but
I'll cast my constant mists when you need it most.
There you go. That's actually like, yeah, I'll save you if anybody attacks you.
Yeah.
You know, so, let's talk about how the deck might play. We haven't really played it much. We've goldfished a little and played a couple of games, but it feels like a token deck at heart, but it's just a little bit different in how it's getting the tokens.
Yeah.
It can really go off. I mean, what we found was that, like, somewhere around turn 6 or 7, it's very possible to have like 10 or 11 lands in play and to do something like cast Scapeshift.
Yeah.
And create, you know, sack all 10 of your lands, create 10 5/3s. You know, put 10 more lands into play, sack all of those, put a Concordant Crossroads down, and attack with 25 threes and kill everybody. Like, that is definitely possible to happen. And the way that some of the card draw works, like with Kavu Lair, so every time a 5/3 comes in, you draw a card, can really like create this snowball effect where in one turn you can do a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super fun when it goes off.
The important thing is you gotta learn how to sequence the cards right, because yeah. you're gonna have a lot of weird cards in your hand, like that lands that like you must sacrifice two untapped lands, and it's like, when do I play this for yes. max effects yes. to be able to do what it needs to do? So you have to make sure that, I mean, it's really about knowing what your lands are, which ones you can get, which ones you're gonna fetch out, which ones can do what in this case, and which ones like how likely you are to draw a forest. Because like with all these lands that add colorless mana, you yeah. have to make sure that you also have enough forests in play that you are actually able to play your green deck.
And putting enough force in the deck to begin with, like when I was, you know, putting it all together, I was like, holy crap, I have like 25, mm-hmm. you know, non-basic lands, and like, I'm only going to put like, you know, 15 basics in there. And that's when I was like, no, for one thing, you got to run a lot more mana than you normally yeah. would, because you just want to draw land all the time.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
also like, you just need enough basic lands, because most of your cards say, go find a basic land.
Yeah.
So you need enough basics to find. So that's another thing. I think it takes some finesse to learn how to play it, but it does have the potential to be very powerful. It's fragile, though.
Yeah, I think this deck is one that it builds in power really quickly, and if dealt with or if unable to go off, quickly decreases in yeah. power past a certain point. So if you're like not hitting your stride soon enough, or you don't hit it at all, you're going to fall flat in your face if you're not careful.
You do have some haymakers, though. Scapeshift is definitely one of them.
Yeah.
Whereas no matter where you are in the game, if you have a lot of land on the table and access to Titania, Scapeshift can sometimes just come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Even if everybody looks like, well, he's got nothing. He's got no cards. He has 20 land, but who cares?
Yeah.
And then you rip Scapeshift off the top. It's like, yep, I have 25 threes, actually. Yeah.
Looks like I win, boys and girls. See you next game. Shuffle up.
Okay, so our mission, should you choose to accept it, is we need you to dig deep into the Gatherer or into your own collection, and mm-hmm. we want to know what other cards
we're missing.
What cards are good in this deck? What cards are we not thinking of?
Yeah, or what interaction is there that you think is busted that we haven't addressed with these cards here?
Yeah. Or did we go in the totally wrong direction? I mean, I don't think we did, but maybe.
Yeah.
We want to hear from you. That might be tied up into the contest of how you can win that dual deck or the fat packs or some play mats or some booster packs. We're not mm-hmm. sure. You got to follow us on Twitter for that, but we want to hear from you.
Yep. So post a comment either on the rocketjump.com, the rocketjump, not just rocketjump.com under the podcast, or send us a tweet at CommandCast. We're going to be announcing how to win stuff soon. And it's not just going to be tied to this podcast in general. If you follow at CommandCast, you will have access to plenty of giveaways. So make sure you guys do that.
Yeah, Christmas is coming up.
Yeah, Christmas.
We're definitely giving stuff away for Christmas.
Heck yeah. We're giving stuff away for Thanksgiving. Of course we're giving away stuff for Christmas.
Oh, and one last thing is we will not be having an episode next week. Jimmy and I are going to be tied up with Thanksgiving festivities. So correct, we're going to skip 1 week. We'll be back in early December. Just an advance warning, too, because of the Christmas season and those holidays, we'll probably miss a couple of episodes around Christmas and New Year's.
Yeah. So, but we'll try and find some kind of fun filler content. Josh and I are testing out some stuff. And, you know, you guys might see something else pop up in the meantime. So,
ooh.
Yeah, we'll test that out.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.